Is thy name Tyrell?
James Tyrell, and your most obedient subject.
Art thou, indeed?
Prove me, my gracious lord.
Darest thou resolve to kill a friend of mine?
Please you, but I had rather kill two enemies.
Why, then thou hast it. Two deep enemies. Foes to my rest and my sweet sleep's disturbers are they that I would have thee deal upon. Tyrell, I mean those bastards in the tower.
Let me have open means to come to them, and soon I'll rid you from the fear of them.
Oh, thou singst sweet music. Hark, come hither, Tyrell. Go by this token. Rise and lend thine ear. There is no more but so. Say, it is done, and I will love thee and prefer thee for it.
I will dispatch it straight.
Truth is the daughter of time.
We present The Daughter of Time, the novel by Josephine Tay, dramatized by Neville Teller. Starring Peter Gilmore as Alan Grant, with Simon Hewitt as Brent Carradine, Francis Jeter as Nurse Ingham, Rosalind Shanks as Marta Hallard, and Jill Lidston as Nurse Darrell.
Why don't you read, then? Just look at that pile of books.
Have you ever tried reading in a hospital bed, Midget?
Nurse Ingham. No, I know what you mean.
You can't settle to it. Anyway, it's damned awkward lying flat on your back, especially with your leg in traction. Do you know, I've examined that ceiling so long I know by heart. Oh, I could draw every crack. I've explored them. Seeing you're up here.
Where? Oh, yes.
Oh, and there, over the washstand. Now, how's that for a broken heart? Midget, I hate the sight of that ceiling. For heaven's sake, turn my bed round a bit so that at least I've got a new patch to look at.
Certainly not. Whatever would matron say?
You mean disturbing the nice symmetry. It's a pity you lot don't remember that hospitals are made for people, not the other way round.
Now, Inspector Grant, you sound decidedly constipated to me. Let's have a look at this chart of yours.
Oh, go away, Midget.
Nurse Ingham.
Perhaps I'll take your advice after all and read.
Are you asleep?
Is that you, Marta?
Did I wake you?
Oh, I wasn't sleeping. Just had my eyes closed. Protecting myself against being disturbed.
Oh, shall I go away?
Oh, no, darling, not you. You're always welcome. You're my contact with the outside world. Oh, I say, how very chic you're looking.
Thanks, I'm glad you like it. I've brought you some lilac.
Gorgeous. Come here.
My poor Alan. Oh, and here's a couple of books. Coles to Newcastle, I'd say. Hope these are more interesting than you seem to have found that lot.
Oh, I can't read anything.
Why not? Oh, Alan, darling, are you in pain?
Agony. Oh. But it's not my leg nor my back.
What then?
Boredom, my love, boredom. I'm prickly with it. It's like being beaten with nettles.
What about the television? Oh, silly me.
They won't sling it from the ceiling, you know.
Well, that radio cassette of yours.
Now, I do listen from time to time, but I can't seem to concentrate for very long.
What about taking something up? Yoga. That induces acceptance.
I did think of going back to algebra. But I've done so much geometry on that damn ceiling that I'm a little off maths.
Why don't you do some academic investigating? Solve an unsolved problem.
Crime, you mean? Sort of a busman's holiday, isn't it? I know all the current case histories by heart. And not a thing I can do about them lying flat on my back. Mind you, my sergeant does pop in from time to time.
I didn't mean something out of your files at the yard. I meant something more, classic. Something that's puzzled the world for ages.
Oh, as what, for instance?
Oh, I don't know. Say the casket letters.
Oh, not Mary, Queen of Scots.
Why not?
Well, I know she's beloved by all you actresses, but I could never be interested in such a silly woman.
Silly? Alan, how could you? She was a martyr.
Yeah. The only thing she was martyred to was rheumatism. She married Darnley without the Pope's dispensation, and she married Bothwell by Protestant rites.
How do you know so much about her?
I did her as a special subject at university.
Oh, and didn't like her, I take it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no casket letters. What else? The man in the iron mask.
Well, I can't remember who that was. Any case, I couldn't be interested in anyone who was being coy behind some tin plate. I couldn't be interested in anyone at all unless I can see his face.
Ah, yes, I forgot your passion for faces. I'll have to see what I can do about that. Very appropriate.
Oh. Martyr. Oh, he gave me quite a turn. How long have you been standing there?
Oh, a good 3 minutes. It seemed a pity to interrupt. Your big toe was wiggling up and down in time to the music.
And what do you mean appropriate?
Hmm?
Oh, I see.
Like it. The hat's Cossack and so are the boots, they tell me.
You look a dream.
Glad you think so. There, my love, I hope that does something for you.
Oh, if you only knew.
I'm not here to stay, Alan. I'm on my way to the theatre. It's matinee day.
Oh, good heavens, so it is. I've quite lost count. Oh, sit down a minute.
Oh, well, let me give you what I came to deliver. It's all in this envelope. There.
Hold on, hold on. What's all this?
Faces. Dozens and dozens of faces for you. Men, women, children, all sorts and conditions and sizes. And all carefully chosen because they're connected with some mystery or other. They ought to keep you amused.
Oh, you're a darling. Thank you very much. Where on earth did you get them all?
I routed James out of his cubbyhole at the V&A and made him take me to a print shop.
Poor, long-suffering James. Who's this?
Lucretia Borgia. Isn't she a duck?
Yes, yeah, she certainly is. Ah, here's a nice Elizabethan gent. Ha-ha, the Earl of Leicester. Elizabeth's Robin. I don't think I've ever seen his face before.
Darling, I must fly. I'm late as it is. Incidentally, how are you?
Well, they say I'm getting better. I don't see it myself.
Bye.
And what's the mystery about Master Robin here?
Amy Robsart. Did she fall or was she pushed? See you.
Oh,
hello, nurse.
Miss Allard.
Bye.
What a mess. What are all these pictures?
They're faces, each one with some odd story.
Mm. Open. Your pulse is going a fair lick this afternoon. Effect of Miss Allard, no doubt. Oh, this one's pretty. The Grand Duchess Anastasia.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's very young. Oh, let's have that. Temperature's normal anyway. How's the back? Are you comfortable?
Not too bad. When's this leg coming down?
Not long now. Mr. McFarlane's coming to see you later on. He may be able to say. Do you like faces?
Well, they've been a passion of mine since I was little. You can tell an awful lot from someone's face, you know.
Mm.
When you know what you're looking for. Now, of course, they're my stock in trade. Yes, Midget, I've made quite a speciality of them.
Oh, so have I, in my own way. A nurse sees an awful lot of them, you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
But you don't believe there's such a thing as a criminal face, do you?
Oh, no, nothing like that. Crimes are as varied as human nature. No policeman would dare try to pick out the naughty boys on looks alone.
That's what I think. But there are things that sharpen a face, you know.
No, such as?
Oh, suffering. Endure pain long enough, physical or mental, And it leaves its mark, believe me.
You're right, of course.
Look at that picture, and you'll see what I mean. No, no, no. That one over there.
This one?
Hmm.
Oh, yes. Now, there's a face for you. Just look at those eyes. What exactly was the artist trying to capture, I wonder? Worry? Preoccupation? It's a curious expression. Could I guess who it is? Let's see. About 35. Lean, clean-shaven. Around the 15th century, I'd say. Obviously a nobleman of some sort. He's dressed in velvet cap and slashed doublet. Judge? No. Soldier? Don't think so. A prince? Possible. Anyway, someone used to great responsibility. A warrior. Yes? I'd say a candidate for an ulcer. And I see what you mean about suffering. Looks like someone who was chronically ill as a child. He's got that special look that childhood suffering leaves behind. A gentle, conscientious, high-principled man. Nope. I'm stumped. Good heavens. Richard III from the portrait in the National Portrait Gallery, artist unknown. Richard III? Richard Crouchbank? A monster of the nursery stories? The synonym for villainy? Do you think that's what the artist's trying to capture in those eyes? A haunted look. What do you say, Midget? Midget, are you there? Must have slipped out. Richard III. This makes the Mona Lisa look like a picture postcard. What a face. Now he's not peering into the middle distance. It's a withdrawn expression. Almost absent-minded.
Still looking at that picture? Oh, it's really got at you, hasn't it? Take these.
No, it's not knockout time already, is it?
It certainly is. I'm just going off duty. Nurse Darrell's right behind me with your supper. You up? Swallow.
Thanks, Midget.
Supper time!
Poor Nurse Darrell, by all that's wonderful, I have missed you.
Oh, get along with you, Inspector Grant. You haven't given me a moment's thought all day.
He hasn't had time. He's been mooning over that picture for hours.
Ooh, who was it? That actress friend of yours, eh? There you are. Now, eat up.
No, Darrell, someone who's been dead for hundreds of years.
Ooh, morbid.
Not at all, just intriguing. You don't happen to have a history book, either of you, do you?
A history book? What would I be doing with a history book?
Well, it so happens I've got one at least. Might even have two. Keep all my school books on a shelf in my room. Of course, I loved history. It was my favourite subject. Richard the Lionheart. Now, he was my hero.
Oh, Bounder.
Oh, no.
Rocketing here and there like a badly made firework. Are you going off duty too now?
Whenever I finish my trays.
Oh, well, you couldn't find me that book, could you?
Now, you're supposed to be going to sleep, not staying awake over history books.
Well, I might as well read some history. Look at that ceiling. Would you? Get it for me?
Well...
Oh, I'll start on the trays. You go and get the book.
I'm not sure I want to go all the way up to the nurse's block and back for someone who's rude about the Lionheart. But as a special favour...
Come in. Oh, Darrell, have you got it?
I was hoping you'd be asleep. I don't really think you should start on these tonight. There's two of you, by the way. Now, why don't you let those sleeping tablets do their stuff?
Oh, if anything's likely to put me to sleep, it's an English history book.
Oh, where are you off to?
The pictures.
Well, you can hold hands with a clear conscience.
Oh, I'm going with Nurse Burrows.
You can still hold hands.
I've no patience with you. Good night.
Good night. Oh, and thanks. Now then. A school history of England. Very nice, too. I might have guessed.
Eller Darrow. Form 5A, Newbridge High School, Newbridge, Gloucestershire, England, Europe, the world, the universe.
Well, that places Ella Darrow. Now, what does the school history do for Richard, I wonder? Let's see.
Richard was a man of great ability, but quite unscrupulous as to his means. He boldly claimed the crown on the absurd ground that his brother's marriage with Elizabeth Woodville had been illegal, and the children of it illegitimate. He was accepted by the people who dreaded a minority and began his reign by making a progress through the south, where he was well received. During this progress, however, the two young princes who were living in the tower disappeared and were believed to have been murdered.
Mm-hmm.
A serious rebellion followed, which Richard put down with great ferocity. A second rebellion followed in the form of an invasion with French troops by the head of the Lancaster branch, Henry Tudor. He encountered Richard at Bosworth, where the treachery of the Stanleys gave the day to Henry. Richard was killed in the battle, fighting courageously, leaving behind him a name hardly less infamous than that of John.
A name hardly less infamous than that of John.
A name hardly less infamous than that.
A name
hardly less infamous than
that. A name hardly less infamous than that.
A name hardly less infamous than that.
A name
hardly less infamous.
Good morning. What sort of a night?
Oh, hello, Darrow.
Oh, I slept very well, thanks to your school history book.
Well, convinced?
Convinced. What about?
Nobility of Richard Coeur de Lion, of course. Right, pull up your pyjama sleeve.
I haven't got round to Richard I yet. But while you're performing your ministrations, tell me, what do you know about Richard III?
I'm not performing ministrations. I am taking your blood pressure. Oh, but those poor lambs.
Who?
Those two precious little boys. Used to be my nightmare when I was a kiddie, that someone would come and put a pillow over my face when I was asleep.
Here, watch it. My fingers are going blue.
Get away with you. Ah, there's nothing much wrong with you.
I'm lying here, fractured in heaven knows how many places, with my leg slung up on high like an unwanted parcel, and you say there's nothing wrong with me?
Oh, you know what I mean.
Is that how it was done? The murder?
Hmm? Oh, yes. Didn't you know? Come on, open up. Sir James Tyrrell rode back to London when the court was at Warwick, quickly recruited two thugs called Dighton and Forrest, and they made their way to the tower, all three of them.
Open! Open in the king's name! Hurry, man!
Sir?
Sir James Tyrrell on the king's business. Where is the constable?
Well,
Speak up, man. Is Sir Robert within or not?
Oh, yes, sir. He's in his lodgings. But I can't let you pass through. My orders, you
Damn see. Your orders! Do you know the royal signature and seal when you see them?
I'm not sure, sir.
Here, see. This is His Majesty's warrant, signed by the king himself, Ricardus.
Oh.
Well, can't you read, ma'am?
No, sir.
The royal seal, you can recognize that. Devil seize the man. Will you take us to Sir Robert?
Oh, yes, sir, I'll do that. Come through.
Come, Dighton. Forrest, follow me. Make haste, man. This is urgent.
You two, wait outside while I'm with the constable. I'll pass you the keys. You'll know where to go and what to do.
Yes, Sir James. We know.
Leave it to us, Sir James.
These gentlemen...
Stand aside. Ooh. Sir James Tyrrell, with orders from His Majesty for the constable. Take me to him. You two, wait. Sir Robert Brackenbury.
I am, sir, and you?
Sir James Tyrrell. His Majesty has charged me personally with secret orders intended for your eyes only. Here, sir.
But I don't quite understand, Sir James. Mm-hmm. I'm commanded to pass over to you the keys of the cell housing the two young princes. Yet there is no order to release the prisoners to your charge. Oh, this is quite irregular.
But absolutely clear, Sir Robert. You aren't questioning the authenticity of the orders, I presume?
No, no, it's His Majesty's hand and the royal seal.
Then perhaps you'll comply, and with speed. This is a matter of high politics.
Of course. At once, come with me.
Of course. Tyrrell had told Dighton and Forrest to kill them. And then they buried them at the foot of some stairs, under a great mound of stones. Come on, then. Normal.
Oh, sorry to disappoint you. But it doesn't say all this in the book you lent me.
Oh, that book's just history for exams, if you know what I mean. You don't get really interesting history in SWAT books like that.
And where did you get this fancy gossip about Tyrrell, may one ask?
It isn't gossip. You'll find it in Sir Thomas More's history at the time. And you can't find a more respected or trustworthy person in the whole of history than Sir Thomas More, now can you?
No. That'd be bad manners to contradict the man for all seasons.
Well, that's what Sir Thomas says. And after all, he was alive then, and he knew all those people to talk to.
Mm. In that case, would you hold on while I scribble a note?
We can't wait long.
It's only a word to Miss Hallard. I'm asking her to get hold of a copy of Sir Thomas More's history. All right, that's it. My stamps are somewhere about. Oh, there. Be an angel and drop it in the postbox.
The things I do for you.
Changed your ideas, I see.
Hello, Midget. What about?
Nurse Ingham, please. About reading. A few days ago, you couldn't bear to open a book. Now look at you.
Ah, but there are books and books. Now, take this.
Oh, I wouldn't take it for a gift. Whew, it weighs a ton to start with, and it looks as dry as dust.
Well, you're not so far out there. It's what they call a constitutional history of England. History with all the personality bleached out. Strong on fact, very weak on interest.
I suppose you're still chasing Richard III?
Chasing, no. After this little lot, I don't think I'll ever chase anything again.
Oh.
But investigating, well, maybe. And I found something quite interesting. Just a snippet. Have you ever heard of the Pastons?
You mean the ones who wrote the letters?
You have. All those family letters of the 15th century with scraps of history sandwiched in between orders for salad oil and inquiries about how Clement was doing at Cambridge. Well, look here. Here. See that? That's just one sentence out of the middle of a letter, but it's a snapshot of an entire little world. Look, it just says that the little York boys, George and Richard, are living in the Pastons' London lodgings.
The little York boys are...
Well, young Richard is your villain-to-be, and George is his elder brother, the Duke of Clarence.
Oh, the one who was drowned in a butt of Malmsey.
Come along, Your Royal Highnesses. Don't play me up now. I'm too old and crabbed to keep up with you.
Well, how old are you then, nurse?
As old as my hair, though not as old as my teeth.
We know.
Why don't you ever tell us, nurse?
Oh, Master Richard, I'm ashamed of you. Don't you know better than to ask a lady's age? And you a prince of the royal blood. No, Just come over here, the both of you. Let me tidy your hair. Oh. You first, Master Richard. There we are. Now keep still.
No.
Warm. Take a minute and it won't hurt you.
Yes.
Come on, now you, Master George. Now, that's it. Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. You've got to look nice, haven't you? That's better. There. Now you both look nice for your brother. Oh, your ladyship.
Are they ready, nurse?
Just about, Lady Paston.
Come, stand by me, your royal highness. His majesty should be here directly.
Isn't it extraordinary, your ladyship? Every day, come rain, come shine.
And here he is. Your majesty.
Edward!
Hello, boys.
Have you brought me anything?
No, Richard, nothing today.
Oh!
Don't look so glum. I was only joking. Here's some sweetmeats. Catch!
Oh, thank you!
And for you, George.
Thank you. You spoiled them, your majesty.
You're only young once, your ladyship. They haven't had all that much joy. And if it weren't for your kindness to them and to me, they'd be greatly missing the comforts of a loving home at the moment.
Oh, but they adore you, your majesty. Your visits are the high point of each day. How you can manage to put aside affairs of state to visit two little boys every day without fail, no one could believe.
Ah, but it's the high point of my day too, my lady. You see, we're a very close and a very loving family, and I'm sure we always shall be.
Hello?
Alan, it's me.
Oh, Marta.
No, don't answer. I'm frantic. Curtain's up. I'm on my way to the wings. Due on stage in 4 minutes. I just phoned to say I got your letter, scouted round the shops, couldn't find a settee more, had a brainwave, went to the public library and got a copy. I'm sending it round with my dresser. You get 14 days. Sounds more like a sentence than a loan.
You're an angel. Thanks so much.
Nonsense. Must fly. Bye.
Shepherd's pie, as ordered.
Oh, thanks.
Here. I'll take the book. There. You comfy?
Very.
Oh, Sir Thomas More, eh? So you've taken my advice and gone to the expert.
I always do what you tell me, Nurse Darrell. Hadn't you noticed?
That'll be the day. But it's all here, Inspector. First-hand evidence from an impeccable witness. Just what ought to appeal to a policeman.
Oh, that's just what's bothering me.
Bothering you? How do you mean?
Well, everything he says about Richard seems so unexpected, out of character. It's just not how I expect Sir Thomas More to write.
Well, what can you mean?
Well, for example, somewhere he gives a long account of how, after the murders, the king lay awake at nights, tossing and turning because of his guilty conscience. Mm-hmm. Then he adds that he has this from, what was his exact phrase? Such as were secret with his chamberers.
Well, what's wrong with that? He's giving the evidence of first-hand witnesses.
Oh, it all smells of backstairs gossip and servants spying. I haven't got the ring of truth.
Mm. Oh, it's very dramatic. Listen to this. He was never quiet in his mind, never thought himself secure. His eyes whirled about, his body was privily fenced, his hand ever on his dagger, his countenance and manner like one always ready to strike again.
I like that again. No, Darrell, that's not the style you expect from a Lord Chancellor, revered for his integrity for 4 centuries.
Well, it's a bit highly coloured, perhaps.
A bit. Somewhere back there is Satie's account of the moment Richard casts aside all pretense and makes his bid for the throne. Now, according to the sainted Thomas, Lord Hastings had been inconveniently pressing for a date for young Edward's coronation. So, Richard suddenly, in a fit of rage, condemns Hastings to death for treason. According to him, they whisked poor Hastings down to the courtyard and chopped off his head on a handy log of wood. 1, 2, 3. Just like that.
Well, certainly sounds like the Richard we all know and love.
Oh, the man's infamy knew no bounds, if you go by Sir Thomas. Seems Richard arranged for a tame clergyman to preach a sermon on the text, "Bastard slips shall take no root." The aim being to spread the word that Richard's two older brothers, Edward and George, were illegitimate.
You mean he had his own mother publicly proclaimed a loose woman? Oh, the wickedness of it.
Scarcely believable, is it? And yet Sir Thomas More said so, and he should know.
What does he say about the princes in the tower?
Oh, the generally accepted version, and with plenty of detail. And who was better qualified than Sir Thomas, Lord Chancellor of England, to weigh evidence and present facts? But, Darrell, it smells fishy. And believe me, I have a nose for that sort of thing. There's something very wrong somewhere, and I'm going to find out what it is.
Breakfast!
Don't talk to me.
Inspector, now what have I done?
Deceiver.
Me? Oh, never.
You're Sir Thomas More. Do you know he knew nothing about Richard III at all?
What?
Oh, crispy bacon.
Well, shift over those books. But of course he knew. He lived then. If anyone knew the truth, he did.
And I tell you, his so-called history is all a swindle.
Sir Thomas More was a man of integrity. He died for his principles.
Yes, and who killed him?
Well, Henry VIII, of course.
Of course. And it was only last evening that the full implication of that fact struck me.
What do you mean?
Well, how could he have been both Richard III's chronicler and Henry VIII's chancellor? To do that, he must have lived through the whole of Henry VII's reign as well as Richard III's. That's the moment I decided something was wrong. So, I looked up Sir Thomas's dates. Here, in the preface to his History of Richard.
And
Darrell, what do I find? I find that in the year Richard came to the throne, Thomas More was a mature 5-year-old. Oh. And when Richard died at Bosworth, he'd reached the grand old age of 8. In short, there's not an original observation anywhere in this book. Every single word is hearsay. And if there's one word a policeman loves more than any other, it's hearsay. Oh, my leg. Especially when applied to evidence.
You aren't feeling so well this morning, are you? Oh, I do hope they don't call off taking you at attraction. This ought to be a great day.
I'm perfectly well in body, Nurse Darrell. Just sickened in mind.
Dear.
Alan, darling, and I wasn't here to see it. Oh, how are you, my pet? It's wonderful to see you out of bed.
They unwinched me like a crane. This leg weighs a ton. I'm simply exhausted from dragging it 4 paces across the room.
But it all held. Nothing gave way.
Yeah, a few creaks and cracks. I'm not sure if it was my joints or the plaster. Felt like Pinocchio. Here, draw a chair up, Marty. You're making me feel nervous.
And how's the investigation going? I am pleased with myself about those faces. Oh, of course, it's all down to James. I don't know how one man keeps so much information inside his head.
As a matter of interest, what made you bring me a portrait of Richard III? I mean, there's no mystery about Richard, is there?
Let me think. Oh, I remember. We were in a print shop sorting through a pile of pictures, and James said if he's mad about faces, there's one for him. He said Richard was the most notorious murderer in history, and yet he had the face of a saint.
A saint? Is that how it seemed to you?
Where is it?
And over there on the table.
Oh.
I asked one or two people round here what they thought. My surgeon, the matron, oh, and Sergeant Williams when he called.
You know, I think of illness. The look in that face is the look you see in the face of a handicapped child. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he'd had polio as a boy and it had left its mark.
Unhappiness. It's the most desperately unhappy face I've ever seen, and I've encountered quite a few in my time. He must have been well aware of how heinous his crime was, and ever afterwards it showed in his face. That is the picture of a man who has done terrible things and knows it.
Made for the bench, he is. The spitting image of old Lanchester. And if Lord Justice Lanchester had a fault, it was being too soft on old legs.
It's odd, you know. When you first look at it, you think it a mean, suspicious face, even cantankerous. But when you look a little longer, you find it isn't like that at all. It's quite calm. It's really quite a gentle face. Perhaps that's what James meant by saint-like.
You don't suppose it's someone else? Not Richard, I mean.
Of course not. Why should you think that?
Because nothing in the face fits the facts of history. Pictures have got shuffled before now.
Oh, of course they have, but this is Richard, all right. James told me the original is at Windsor Castle and has been for 400 years. It was in Henry VIII's inventory, and there are duplicates.
All right, it's Richard. You don't happen to know anyone at the BM by any chance, do you?
The British Museum. No, I don't think so. Why, what do you want?
information about history written in Richard III's day. Contemporary accounts.
Isn't the sainted Sir Thomas any good, then?
The sainted Sir Thomas is nothing but an old gossip.
Oh, dear. And the nice man at the library seems so reverent about him. So what do you want to find out about Richard?
What made him tick? I need someone to go digging for me.
Uh-huh.
What was that for?
I've just thought of something.
Well?
No. I won't tell you, in case it doesn't come off.
Oh,
I must fly. Bye, darling. Watch the leg. Take it easy.
Come in.
Mr. Grant?
Huh?
My name is Carradine. Brent Carradine. Oh, I hope I haven't disturbed you when you were resting.
No, no. Come in, Mr. Carradine. Oh, I'm delighted to see you.
Marta, Miss Hallard, that is, sent me. She said I could be of some help to you.
Did she say how? Oh, sit down. You'll find a chair over there by the door. Oh, bring it over.
Right. Marta, Miss Hallard, that is, said you wanted something looked up.
Oh, and are you a looker-upper?
In a way. I'm doing research here in London. Historical research, I mean. I work at the BM most mornings. I'd be very pleased, Mr. Grant, to do anything I can to help you.
Well, that's very kind of you. Very kind indeed. What are you working on? Your research, I mean.
The Peasants' Revolt.
Oh. Richard II.
Yeah.
Are you interested in social conditions?
No, not terribly. I'm interested in staying in England.
And you can't stay in England without doing some research.
Not very easily. I've got to have an alibi. My pop thinks I should go into the family business. It's furniture. You order it by mail. It's very good furniture, but I can't take much interest in it.
Short of polar exploration, the British Museum was the best hideaway you could think of.
Well, it's warm. And I really do like history. I majored in it. If you really want to know, Mr. Grant, I just had to follow Atlanta Shergill to England. She's the dumb blonde in Marta's, I mean, Miss Hallard's play. I mean, she plays the dumb blonde. She's not at all dumb, Atlanta.
No, indeed. A very gifted girl.
You've seen her?
Well, I shouldn't think there's anyone in London who hasn't.
I suppose not. Does go on and on, doesn't it? Oh, but you don't want to hear about me. I came to...
Whatever you came for, your manner from heaven. So relax, if you're not in a hurry.
Oh, I'm never in a hurry. Oops, I've knocked something over. I haven't really got used to the length of my legs yet. You'd think a fellow would be used to his growth by 22, wouldn't you? Ricardus Tertius Ang Rex.
You know, you're the first person to notice that background writing behind Richard's face.
Well, I suppose you can't see it unless you look. You're the first person I've ever met who had a king for a pin-up.
No beauty, is he?
I don't know. It's not a bad face, as faces go. I had a prof at college who looked rather like him. Kindest creature imaginable. Is it about Richard you want information?
Yes. Nothing very abstruse or difficult. Just what the contemporary authority is.
Oh, that should be easy enough. One of the modern authorities for my research period stretches over both. He's been superseded, but you've got to know what he wrote. Sir Cuthbert Oliphant. Have you read Oliphant?
Oh, afraid not, sir. Oh. So far, I've been confined to two school history books and Sir Thomas More.
More? Henry VIII's Chancellor?
That's right.
I take it that was a bit of special pleading.
It read to me more like a party pamphlet. Now, do you know anything about Richard III?
Nothing. Except that he croaked his nephews and offered his kingdom for a horse. How did you get interested in Richard?
Well, Marta suggested I do some academic investigating, since practical investigating's out for some time to come.
I see. Good idea.
I like faces. So she bought me a lot of portraits of possible subjects. Richard got in more or less by accident, but he's proving the biggest mystery of the lot.
Oh, in what way?
Well, he's the author of a revolting crime, and he has the face of a great judge. And it's quite well known that he was an excellent administrator, a good soldier, and devoted to his brother. Now, his brother,
bar Charles II's, our most wench-ridden royal product.
Edward IV.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. A 6-foot hunk of male beauty. Perhaps Richard resented the contrast. If I were a hunchback, I'd sure hate a brother who got all the glory and all the women. Still, that's very interesting what you say about Richard being a good sort up to the moment of his crime. Makes him more of a person. That Shakespeare version of him, you know, that's just a caricature. Mr. Grant, I'll be pleased to do any investigating you want. It'll make a nice change from the peasants.
Well, what did you think of my digger-upper?
Darling Marta, it was very kind of you to find him for me.
Oh, I didn't have to find him, my love. He's continually underfoot. He practically lives at the theatre. He must have seen the play 500 times. When he isn't in Atlanta's dressing room, he's out front. We should get married. We might see less of him. Was it Brent who brought you this great tome?
Yes, he left it with the porter for me this morning. It's one of his authorities, Sir Cuthbert Oliphant.
Oh, it looks very indigestible.
Let's say it's a bit unappetizing. Actually, it's quite easily digested once you've swallowed it. History for the student.
Ugh.
Well, at least I've discovered where the revered and sainted Sir Thomas More got his account of Richard.
Yes? Where?
From one John Morton.
Never heard of him.
Well, nor had I. But that's our ignorance.
Who was he?
Henry VII's Archbishop of Canterbury, and Richard's bitterest enemy.
Good grief. So that was the horse's mouth.
That was the horse's mouth. And it's on that account of Richard that all the later ones were built, including Shakespeare's.
So it's the version of someone who hated Richard. I didn't know that. Why did the sainted Sir Thomas report Morton rather than someone else?
Now, whoever he reported, it would be a Tudor version. But he reported Morton, it seems, because he'd been in Morton's household as a boy. And, of course, Morton had been very much in on the act, so it was natural to write down the version of an eyewitness.
But does your dull, fat historian acknowledge that it's a biased version?
Oliphant? Mm. Only by implication. To be honest, he's in a terrible muddle about Richard himself. He says he was admirable in every way, staid, good living and popular. And on the same page calls him perfectly unscrupulous and ready to wade through any amount of blood to reach the throne.
Does your dull, fat Oliphant prefer his roses red, then?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't think he's consciously Lancastrian. Though now I come to think of it, he's very tolerant of Henry VII. Can't remember him saying anywhere that Henry hadn't a vestige of a claim to the throne.
Who put him there, then? Henry, I mean.
Oh, those who were left of the Lancastrians after the Battle of Bosworth. Backed, I suppose, by public opinion, which must have been revolted by the murder of the princes. Actually, Henry himself was canny enough in his claim to the throne to put conquest first and his Lancastrian blood second. How does the phrase go? De jure belli et de jure Lancastriae. De jure Lancastriae, indeed. His mother was the heir of an illegitimate son of the third son of Edward III.
I thought it was Richard's personality you were after. Are you any closer?
No, I'm not. Just as much up a gum tree as Sir Cuthbert Oliphant, bless his heart. The only difference between us is that I know I'm bewildered.
Oh, I seem to be butting in.
Oh, no.
I didn't know you were here, Miss Hallard. I met the Statue of Liberty in the corridor there, and she seemed to think you were alone, Mr. Grant.
The Statue of Liberty? Uh-huh. Oh, you mean the nice Nurse Darrell.
No, it's all right. I'm on my way. I'll leave you two alone to pursue your murderer's soul. Goodbye, Alan. Take care.
Bless you, darling. Come soon.
I will.
Bye.
Bye.
How are you getting on with Oliphant?
Oh, I find him very lucid in explaining his rather muddled ideas, that is. Incidentally, Sir Cuthbert shattered that theory of yours.
What theory?
You know, that Richard hated his brother because of the contrast between his beauty and Richard's hunchback. According to Sir Cuthbert, the hunchback is a myth, and so is the withered arm. Seems he had no visible deformity, at least none that mattered. His left shoulder was a bit lower than the right, and that's all. By the way, did you find out who the contemporary historian is?
There isn't one. Not in the way you mean. All the writers who lived in Richard's time wrote after his death, For the Tudors, in fact, which rather puts them out of court.
Really?
There's a monkish chronicle in Latin somewhere, but I haven't been able to get hold of it yet. Oh, one thing I have discovered. That account of Richard III is called Sir Thomas More's, not because he wrote it, but because the manuscript was found among his papers. It was an unfinished copy of an account that appears elsewhere in finished form.
Well, you mean it was More's own manuscript's copy?
Exactly. In his writing. Made when he was about 35. In those days, before printing was general, it was quite the damn thing to make manuscript copies of books.
Oh, of course, yes. So, if the information came from John Morton, as we know it did, yeah, it's just as likely the thing was written by Morton in the first place.
That's right.
Which would certainly account for the lack of sensibility. A climber like Morton wouldn't be at all abashed by backstairs gossip. Do you know about Morton?
Not at all.
Well, it's all here. He was a lawyer turned churchman, and he could have taught the Vicar of Bray a thing or two. First, he chose the Lancastrian side and stayed with it until it was clear that Edward IV was home and dry. Then he made his peace with the York side, and Edward made him Bishop of Ely. After Richard's accession, he backed the widowed queen's family, the Woodvilles, when they seemed the most powerful party. Then he cast in his lot with Henry Tudor and helped him invade the country. He ended up with a cardinal's hat as Henry VII's Archbishop of Canterbury.
Wait a minute. Of course I know Morton. He was the Morton of Morton's Fork, the classic tax-collecting dodge.
Huh?
If you're not spending much, you can obviously afford more for the king. And if you're spending a lot, then you're wealthy and can obviously afford more for the king. Heads I win, tails you lose.
That's Morton. Henry's best thumbscrew. And you know, Oliphant actually gives us a damn good reason why he might have hated Richard long before the murder of the boys.
But Edward, only think of the dishonour. To you, to England, to our...
Don't fuss so, Richard. The Majesty of France wants peace. The Majesty of France can pay.
Can't you see? You have engaged the French. Our armies have fought and died to uphold your just cause. And now you agree to withdraw, to come to terms, simply because Louis is willing to pay you a large enough bribe.
Bribe? A strong word, brother.
A true word, brother.
What is your opinion, Bishop Morton?
Your Majesty, I see no dishonour in the arrangement you have reached with the French king. It's a sensible accommodation. Both parties gain something and lose something. Louis wins the peace he wants and loses a large sum of cash. You win the cash...
And lose your honour. A fine bargain. I'll be no party to this deal, I tell you now. I wash my hands of it, and I'll have nothing to do with anyone who engineered it now or in the future. In my eyes, they are tainted.
Is that barb aimed at me?
If the cap fits.
Your Majesty, I've simply conducted your affairs to the best of my humble ability. I do not think the keeper of your privy purse will be complaining.
No, indeed.
Nor yours, my Lord Bishop.
What do you mean?
I have it on the best authority that His French Majesty is very sensible of your role in this affair. Sensible to the tune of a personal pension. Deny it if you can, my Lord Morton. Are you not, even now, in receipt of a pension from King Louis?
Morton, you old rogue, you didn't tell me.
A private arrangement, Your Majesty. Simply a small token of appreciation.
2,000 crowns a year! By God, Edward, this whole affair stinks to high heaven. An understanding of this sort between monarchs, that is bad enough in all conscience. But that this go-between, this pander, should stuff his own pockets out of England's degradation, that is intolerable. You, my Lord Bishop, are a blot upon the good government of this realm. If I had my way, I'd strip you of every office you hold and hound you from the land.
And, of course, from that moment, Morton saw there'd be no preferment for him if the straight-laced Richard ever came to power. So he'd have taken the side of the widowed queen's family, the Woodvilles, even if there'd been no murder.
About that murder.
Yes?
The murder of those two boys. Isn't it odd that no one talks of it?
How do you mean no one talks of it? No one seems to talk of anything else.
No. These last 3 days I've been going through the documents of the period. You know, letters, papers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I assure you, no one mentions the murders at all.
Perhaps they were afraid to. After all, it was a time when it paid to be discreet.
Granted. I'll tell you something even odder. You know that Henry brought a bill of attainder against Richard straight after Bosworth. Well, he throws the book at Richard, accuses him of everything under the sun. But he doesn't mention the murder either.
What?
You may well look startled.
Are you sure?
Quite sure.
But Henry got possession of the tower as soon as he arrived in London, straight after the Battle of Bosworth. If the boys were missing, it's quite incredible he didn't publish the fact at once. It's against all reason if what we're told is true. Henry needed every ounce of advantage to bolster his position. He wasn't well known, and he had no real right to the crown.
Yes, and we're told the country was ringing with the scandal of the boy's disappearance.
That's right. And yet Henry didn't use the one real trump card, the unforgivable, hateful crime of murdering two innocent youngsters. Why? Well, I can't make sense of it. What possible explanation can there be for not making capital out of the fact that the boys were missing?
There is only one explanation. The boys weren't missing.
Oh, no, that's nonsense. Well, must be some obvious explanation that we're failing to see.
Like what, for instance?
Well, you studied the bill of attainder in full. You're not missing anything?
Really not, Mr. Grant. Every accusation Henry could possibly make with any hope of getting away with was put into that bill. And the very worst he could accuse Richard of was cruelty and tyranny. No, Mr. Grant, I assure you, the boys aren't even mentioned.
It's fantastic.
It's unbelievable, but it's a fact.
Hold fast, though. Tyrrell was hanged for the murder. I mean, he actually confessed to it before he died. Where's old Oliver? There's a full account of it here somewhere. There's no mystery about it. Even your Statue of Liberty knew about it. Quite well known that Tyrrell committed the murder and confessed before he died.
Was that in 1485, when Henry took over in London?
Wait a minute. Ah, here it is. Uh-huh. No, it was 1502. 1502.
But that was...
Yeah. Nearly 20 years later.
Good grief.
I don't think my brain can be working very well. A 40 million schoolbooks can't be wrong.
Can't they?
What's so funny?
Oh, this is the first time I've seen you look like a policeman.
Well, maybe that's because I'm feeling like a policeman. I'm thinking like a policeman. I'm asking myself the question that every policeman asks in every case of murder. Who benefits? And for the first time, it strikes me that the glib theory that Richard got rid of the boys to make himself safer on the throne is so much nonsense. Supposing he had got rid of the boys, there were still the boys' 5 sisters between him and the throne, to say nothing of George's son and daughter.
And did they all survive him?
I don't know, but I shall make it my business to find out. And you'll help me, Mr. Carradine. Won't you?
I surely will.
Right. Where do we begin?
Oh, you're the investigator. I'm the looker-upper.
Research worker. Oh,
thanks.
Right, then. Well, for a start, it'd be useful, not to say enlightening, to know how the principals in the case reacted to Edward IV's death. He died unexpectedly, and it must have caught everyone on the hop. I'd like to know how the people concerned reacted.
Policeman, where were you at 5 p.m. on the night of the 15th?
It works. I promise you it works.
Well, I'll go away and work, too. I'll be in again as soon as I've got what you want. By golly, this is a darn sight better than all those old peasants.
Come along, Inspector.
Just a minute. Well,
swing around on the bed first.
But I can't move this great lump of plaster. Oh, it's like a tree trunk.
Oh, nonsense. Of course you can move it. You moved it yesterday. And you'd better move it pretty smartly because the doctor will be here soon.
Oh, full of the milk of human kindness today, aren't we, nursing him?
Ah, you can call me Midget.
Oh, thank you.
Come on, Inspector Grant. Jolly good exercise for the tummy muscles.
My tummy muscles are in perfect trim, thank you very much.
Then prove it.
Satisfied?
Jolly good. Now, ease forward.
How's that?
Right. Now, tuck your arms right in the crutches. Now stand up.
Oh,
Stand up, she says.
It's not difficult, Inspector Grant. Honestly, it isn't. It just needs a little confidence.
A little confidence is what I lack.
Oh, come on. I'll help you.
There!
No, it's only 4 or 5 paces to the chair. Off you go.
Looks more like 4 or 5 miles.
So, he calls you Midget.
It's his nickname for me.
He never calls me anything. I wonder what nickname he'd give me.
Better not to know.
Oh, you're probably right.
If you two have stopped discussing me, you'll notice I've made it.
Hooray!
It's a lovely day, Mr. Grant. I walked all the way.
And I've been sitting here watching the sparrows in the sunshine. I put some breadcrumbs on the windowsill just before collapsing into this seat. Look, that's the bold one. Fearless Fred.
You're so good at the nicknames, Mr. Grant. How would you react to St. Francis?
Oh, touché.
Speaking of saints, I wouldn't have the sainted Moor as a gift. He's a way off beam.
I suspected as much. Right, let's have the facts then. Can you begin on the day Edward died?
It's all here. Now, Edward died on April the 9th, 1483, in London. I mean in Westminster, which wasn't the same thing then. The Queen and the daughters were living there, and the younger boy, Richard. The older boy, Edward, the Prince of Wales, was doing lessons at Ludlow Castle under the widowed Queen's brother, Lord Rivers, one of those Woodvilles.
Well, go on. Where was Richard?
On the Scottish border.
Never.
He was. Caught away off base. But does he yell for a horse and go posting off to London to throttle his nephews and grab the crown? He does not.
Well, what does he do?
He arranges for a requiem mass at York.
Eh?
All the nobility of the north are summoned. After the mass, an interesting ceremony takes place. They all gather in the open, and Richard addresses them. Picture the scene, Mr. Grant. It's very much this time of year. Early spring, perhaps a day like today, with the sparrows abroad, 15th century sparrows.
My lords, we come from honoring the memory of my dearly beloved brother, your late king. With his death, a heavy burden falls on my shoulders. I am charged with a double duty. I am, by his will, made guardian of our sweet Prince Edward, shortly to be our crowned monarch. A duty I must fulfill until he reaches years of discretion. And until he attains his majority, I am created protector of this kingdom. Given the awesome responsibility of governing wisely and well on his behalf, so that in due time I may hand over to him a prosperous, peaceful, and flourishing realm. In exercising my wardship, I shall need your loyal support. But, my lords, I do not ask for loyalty to me. I ask for loyalty to the prince, my nephew, on whose behalf I shall henceforth act. My lords, as you loved my brother, and as on your honor you owe allegiance to his rightful and lawful heir, I ask you now to swear an oath of fealty to the prince. On your knees, my lords, and each raise the crosspiece of his sword. My lords, do you each severally and conjointly swear due obedience and loyalty to the high and mighty, the Prince Edward, your right and lawful liege lord?
We will do!
Your Royal Highness.
My Lord Buckingham. You look travel-weary.
I have ridden hard from London. 2 days and a night without rest.
You have news?
Not good, my lord.
Come with me. We can talk privately under those trees. What goes on in London?
Lord Dorset has taken over the arsenal and the treasure in the tower. He has begun to fit up ships to command the Channel.
Indeed. Is that simply a wise precaution in my absence, do you think? Or a bid for power? I wonder.
The latter, I fear, my lord. He is issuing council orders in his own name and that of Lord Rivers.
With no mention of me?
None, my lord.
They have absolutely no right. By heaven, Buckingham, I am the lawful protector of this realm and guardian of the prince. Tell me, is there any news of my nephew? He was at Ludlow with Lord Rivers, was he not?
Yes, but they left there a week ago. Lord Rivers has given out that he has the prince under his protection. Do you know he is marching to London at the head of an army 2,000 strong? Well armed, too, by all accounts.
Oh, those Woodvilles! Yes, they are out to seize the crown for themselves. We must leave at once. I must catch up with him as quickly as possible, or young Edward will lose his inheritance for good.
Why not raise an army on the way?
And plunge us all into civil war again? Certainly not. No, I and any of those gentlemen who want to come with me will travel to London in mourning for my brother, not in armor. It is not too late, Buckingham. But first, my lord, we'll hold a council.
A council? Here?
Here and now. A legal council as only I am entitled to do.
And so he did. As protector, he issued orders for the arrest of Rivers and three of his aides and sent armed men to execute the warrants. All four were caught and sent to the north.
And Richard?
Richard went on with the young prince to London. Of course, he was already really King Edward V, but in those times, when the crown had been up for grabs in the Wars of the Roses, you needed a coronation to confirm a change of monarch. Anyway, Richard and young Edward arrived on the 4th of May.
Well, that's very nice and clear. In fact, Richard did just what you'd expect of a responsible protector of the realm and a loving guardian. Now, where's the break in the pattern?
Oh, not for a long time. When he got to London, he found that the Queen, the younger boy, the daughters, and Dorset had all bolted into sanctuary at Westminster. Apart from that, things seemed to have been normal.
Did he take the boy to the tower?
Wait a minute. Have it here somewhere. No. No, he took the boy to the bishop's palace in St. Paul's Churchyard, and he himself went to stay with his mother at Baynard's Castle. Do you know where that was?
It was the York's townhouse. It stood on the river bank, just a little way west of St. Paul's.
Well, he stayed there until his wife arrived from the north on June the 5th, and then they went to stay in a house called Crosby Place.
Still called Crosby Place. Well, been moved to Chelsea. So, there's no suggestion of opposition to Richard's protectorship.
Oh, no, no. He was called protector in the patent rolls before he even arrived in London. Let me see. April the 21st. That's less than a fortnight after King Edward's death. And May the 2nd. That's 2 days before he arrived in London at all.
All right, I'm sold. No fuss and no hint of trouble?
Not that I can find. The boy's coronation was all set for the 22nd of June. Richard gave detailed instructions, the order of ceremony, the boy's robes.
When did he?
On the 5th.
If he was planning a switchover, he wasn't leaving himself much time.
He wasn't.
And then what?
Well, that's as far as I've got. What I do know is that something happened at a council a few days later. On the 8th of June, I think. There's an account written at the time by a Frenchman called Philippe de Comines. I haven't managed to get hold of a copy yet. Someone's promised me one for tomorrow. It seems the Bishop of Bath, his name was Stillington, broke some news to the council that changed everything. As soon as I find out what happened, I'll let you know.
Hello?
Mr. Grant?
Hello there.
Brent Carradine.
Brent, good to hear from you. You found something?
I sure have.
I'm at the British Museum, just through looking up that account by Comines of the Council of the 8th of June, 1483. It's sensational.
Well, go on, then. I'm all agog.
Just a minute while I put in a few more Tempe pieces. Oh, I dropped it. That should keep us going for a bit. Stillington, the Bishop of Bath, that is, told the council a most extraordinary story. It seems that Edward the Fourth, handsome, womanizing, self-indulgent Edward, long before he married Elizabeth Woodville...
Careful, the way is rough.
How much further to the chapel now, my Lord Bishop?
The night is very dark, my lady, or you will see how close we are.
Pity there's no moon.
Better so, Your Majesty, considering.
I suppose so. What do you think, Eleanor?
I'd have all the world know our business, my lord.
I dare say you would, but I fear it would scarcely be politic.
Politic? You are the king, aren't you? Why can't you marry whom you please?
Hush, my darling, I am marrying whom I please.
Oh, but like this, in secret, in the dead of night, as if we're committing a crime.
I tried to explain, my love. My cousin Warwick won me the crown. He holds the power. He could unseat me at any time if he chose, so he mustn't know. Is that a torch from inside the chapel, my Lord Bishop?
It is, Your Majesty. I have two priests waiting to act as witnesses.
Trustworthy, I hope.
Discretion itself, Your Majesty. Ah, here we are. This way, Your Majesty.
Thank you, my Lord
Bishop.
Are you there?
We are, my Lord Bishop.
Well, let's get on with it. It's damn cold in here.
Follow me, Your Majesty, if you please. Lady Eleanor?
But, Edward, why must the Earl of Warwick not know? That's what I can't understand.
Your poor little fingers are icy.
Oh.
It's all high politics, my love. Warwick set his heart on a French marriage for me. Don't worry your sweet head about it.
Can he really take the crown away from you if he finds out?
He won't. And his power won't last forever. Just be patient, my sweet, and soon everyone will know that you are my chosen, my beloved queen.
This will do. Now then, you two, one on either side.
Yes, my lord.
May I commence, Your Majesty?
Yes, yes, as quickly as possible.
Do you mean to say that when Edward the Fourth married Elizabeth Woodville, he was already married?
To Lady Eleanor Butler, according to Stillington, that is.
Ye gods. Bigamy. And all the children bastards. Why had Stillington kept it to himself so long?
Well, on Edward's orders, naturally.
This Stillington, anything known?
Yes. He'd been Edward's Privy Seal, then his Lord Chancellor, and his ambassador to Brittany, so he was a trusted servant. No reason to cook up anything against Edward. Anyway, we don't just have to take Stillington's word for it. The whole affair was put to Parliament.
Was it, by George?
It sure was. Everything was open and above board. There was a very long meeting of the lords, sitting really as a court of inquiry.
And that, my lords, on my solemn oath, is what occurred. The marriage I performed was solemnized and duly witnessed. It was lawful. Our late king was therefore, without a shadow of a doubt, already wedded to Lady Eleanor Butler, at the time he underwent a form of marriage ceremony with the Lady Elizabeth Woodville, now his widowed queen.
And that was held in secret too, my lords, as you will recall. The council only came to hear of that some time after the event. Secret ceremonies seem to have been something of a penchant of our late monarch. You say the covert marriage that you solemnize was with a Lady Eleanor Butler. Where is the lady, my Lord Bishop?
Alas, my lord, she has been dead these many years. She took the veil a year or two after her wedding. She could not have been more than 20 years of age at the time, and she lived in retirement until her untimely death. The mother superior has deposed that she faded away and died of a broken heart.
Precisely. You say that marriage you performed was duly witnessed, my Lord Bishop. Who were the witnesses? Can you produce them?
Indeed I can, my lord.
Both witnesses are present and await your lordship's pleasure.
Let them be summoned.
That hearing took place on the 9th of June, and a report was immediately put in hand. On the 10th, Richard sent a letter to the city of York, where his support was rock solid, asking for help.
Ah, trouble at last.
Yes, and the danger must have been real. 10 days later, on the 20th, he went to the tower with a small body of retainers, interrupted a meeting of conspirators, and arrested 3. Lord Hastings, Lord Stanley, and guess who?
Well?
John Morton, Bishop of Ely.
Aha. I thought we'd arrive at Morton sooner or later.
Only one of them was beheaded, Lord Hastings.
Yes. According to the sainted Moor, he was rushed down to the courtyard and beheaded on a log.
Rushed? Nothing. The execution was a week later. The date's in a letter written at the time.
And what happened to Stanley and John Morton?
Stanley was pardoned.
Oh, no.
Why are you groaning?
Oh, poor Richard. That was his death warrant.
What do you mean?
Stanley's decision to go over to the other side was what cost Richard the Battle of Bosworth. He deserted and took half an army with him. Odd, isn't it, eh? If Stanley had gone to the block like Hastings, Richard would have won the battle. There'd have been no Tudors, and the hunchbacked monster would never have been invented. On his previous showing, he'd probably have had the best and most enlightened reign in history. What was done to Morton?
Nothing.
Another mistake.
I've no more money. I'm coming round. Be with you in quarter of an hour.
You know, it strikes me Richard's ambition was to put an end to the York-Lancaster quarrel once and for all.
What makes you think that?
Oh, his coronation lists, for one thing. It was the best attended coronation on record. Almost no one stayed away, Lancaster or York.
That would certainly explain his leniency to Stanley.
Was Stanley a Lancastrian, then?
No, but he was married to a rabid one, Margaret Beaufort.
Margaret Beaufort. That name rings a bell. It can't be.
It is. Henry the VII's mother.
You actually mean to say that Lady Stanley was Henry's mother?
She was. By her first husband, Edmund Tudor.
But Lady Stanley had a place of honor at Richard's coronation.
Poor Richard. It didn't work.
What didn't?
Magnanimity. So Parliament accepted Stillington's evidence.
They did more. They incorporated it into an act, giving Richard the legitimate title to the crown. It was called Titulus Regius. There was no reason for Stillington to say anything while Edward was alive. After all, Lady Eleanor Butler wasn't around. She died quite early on. But when it came to the succession, he simply had to.
So the children were declared illegitimate in open Parliament, and Richard was crowned.
Mm-hmm.
Was the Queen still in sanctuary?
Yes. But she'd let the younger boy join his brother. They were both living at the tower. And that seems to be all to date. But here's the payoff. You know that act, Titulus Regius?
Yes. What about it?
Well, when Henry the VII came to the throne, he ordered that the act should be repealed without being read. More than that, he ordered that the act itself should be destroyed. He even forbade any copies to be kept. Anyone who kept a copy was to be fined and imprisoned indefinitely.
But why? What possible difference could it make to Henry?
I haven't a clue. But don't worry, Mr. Grant. I'll find out. I promise you.
Did you know, Midget, that James Tyrrell wasn't brought to book for the murder of the princes in the tower for 20 years?
Really? As long as that? It's like those Nazi war criminals. Still, he got his just deserts in the end.
That's all very well, but why the delay? That's what I asked myself.
Policeman.
Yes, but it's important. See this great tome here?
Yes.
It's by a very respectable historian called Sir Cuthbert Oliphant. And it's the story most people believe. It says here that while Richard was on a triumphant coronation progress through England, sometime between July the 7th and July the 15th, he sent Tyrrell back to London to make away with the boys.
Triumphant? That snake in the grass?
Triumphant, yeah.
He'd been crowned because Parliament had been presented with very good evidence that the two princes were illegitimate. Mm. Ah, yeah, you can look sceptical, but I promise you the case is quite convincing. Parliament passed an act giving Richard the crown. It was all legal and above board. And the coronation tour was a chorus of blessings and thanksgiving. And yet, during this universal hosanna, we're asked to believe Richard ordered the murders.
Mm. Couldn't have all been sweetness and light. What about his enemies?
Oh, there was John Morton, Bishop of Ely. He spent some time fomenting trouble before he fled to the Fens and then to the continent. He tried to organise an invasion by Henry Tudor that autumn, but no one wanted to know. Poor Richard.
Why poor Richard?
Well, his son died the following spring. Less than a year later, he lost his wife. Now, in spite of what you think of him, they say he was desperate with grief.
You're almost making me feel sorry for him.
Other enemies? Well, yes, there was also Lady Stanley, Henry Tudor's mother. Richard had tried to be generous with her, giving her a place of honour at his coronation. Then she was discovered to be writing treason to her son on the continent. But again, Richard was too lenient for his own good. You know what he did?
Surprise me.
He handed her over to her husband for safekeeping. And Lord Stanley was the man who deserted him at the Battle of Bosworth.
The monster doesn't seem to be running to form.
You said it, Midget. You said it. That's beautiful.
According to the label, it's about as close to the real McCoy as you're likely to get. Music of the 15th century played on the real instruments.
So this was what kept the Yorkist court amused. Poor Richard. He was in dire need of cheering up most of the time.
He sure was.
You haven't managed to find out why Henry was so anxious to hush up that titulus regius act, have you?
Afraid not. It was hushed up. The original draft turned up, just by chance, in the Tower records years later. It was printed in 1611.
So there never was an Elizabeth Lucy.
Who's Elizabeth Lucy?
Why, didn't I tell you? According to the sainted Moore, Richard claimed his brother married one of his mistresses, an Elizabeth Lucy.
Oh, that's nonsense.
So the sainted Moore smugly pointed out. And of course he doesn't even mention Lady Eleanor Butler.
But why would they want to hide her?
Obvious, because she really had married Edward.
But if that's so, and if Parliament had agreed, then Prince Edward was illegitimate. He was no danger to Richard. Why kill him?
Exactly. Have you thought why that first invasion attempt, the one stirred up by Morton, was in Henry's favour and not in young Edward's? Don't forget it was long before there was any hint of the boy's disappearance. If there'd been half a chance that England would have accepted the prince, surely Lord Dorset would have been fighting to restore his half-brother.
I'll tell you something else. The Queen came out of sanctuary quite soon.
Did she?
And she settled down in London as if nothing had happened. Her daughters went to festivities at the palace. Guess when?
Surprise me.
After, we're told, the princes had been murdered. That's not all. With her two boys done to death by their wicked uncle, she writes to her other son in France, Lord Dorset, and asks him to come home and make his peace with Richard, who will treat him well. No comment?
You know, from the police point of view, there's simply no case against Richard at all.
I'll say there isn't. Especially when I tell you that every single one of the heirs to the throne of England was alive and free when Richard was killed at Bosworth. Mr. Grant, do you want to write a book about this?
A book? Heaven forbid. Why?
Because I'd like to.
Well, right away, then. But you've got a lot more research to get through, you know. You haven't even arrived yet at the real question.
Oh, and what's that?
Why, who did murder the boys? If they were alive when Henry took over the tower, what happened to them?
Well, what's the 15th century got that I haven't? That's one of your new fine friends you have in bed with you, I take it.
My love, I am sorry. Yes, Sir Cuthbert Oliphant. No real rival, I assure you. Not where bed's concerned, anyway.
Then how?
Well, he comes close in keeping me guessing.
Where can I put these irises?
Oh, aren't they beautiful?
Why not use the jug? I won't want the water.
So Sir Cuthbert's a bit of an enigma.
He sure is. If your two sons had been murdered by your brother-in-law, would you take a handsome pension from him?
I take it that the question's rhetorical. Oh, over here, I think.
Honestly, I think historians are all mad. Listen to this. The conduct of the Queen Dowager is hard to explain. Whether she was tired of her forlorn existence at Westminster and had resolved to be reconciled to the murderer of her sons out of mere callous apathy seems uncertain.
Merciful heaven.
Do you think historians really listen to what they're saying?
Who was the said Queen Dowager?
Elizabeth Woodville. Edward IV's wife, or rather widow.
Oh, yes.
Of course, I'm only a policeman. Perhaps I never moved in the right circles, but where would one have to go to meet a woman who became matey with the murderer of her two boys?
Ancient Greece?
I can't think of a sample even there.
Or a lunatic asylum, perhaps. Any sign of idiocy about Elizabeth Woodville?
Not so as you'd notice. And she was queen for 20 years, you know. How would you play her?
Play who?
The woman who came out of sanctuary and made friends with her children's murderer for 700 marks a year. And the right to go to parties at the palace.
I couldn't. There's no such woman. Who invented her?
No one invented her. Elizabeth Woodville did come out of sanctuary and did accept a pension from Richard. Her daughters did go to parties at the palace, and she even wrote to her other son to come back to England and become friends with Richard. And all Oliphant can give, by way of explanation, is that she was bored.
Well, what's your theory?
I'm a policeman. The obvious explanation is most likely to be the correct one. Anyway, until something better shows up. And to me, the obvious explanation is that the boys were alive and well. In fact, no one at the time ever suggested otherwise.
You think, then, you really soberly think, as a policeman, that Richard didn't have anything to do with the boys' death?
I'm quite sure that they were alive and well when Henry took over the tower on his arrival in London. If the boys were missing, there's absolutely nothing to explain why he didn't create one hell of a scandal.
You and young Carradine seem to be having a lovely time with history. When I suggested a little investigation to stop the prickles of boredom, I'd no idea I was contributing to rewriting it. Which reminds me. Atlanta Shergold is gunning for you.
Me? I've never even met the girl.
Nevertheless, she says Brent's more attached to the BM than an alcoholic to his bottle. She can't tear him away. Watch out. You're responsible for the breakup of a beautiful relationship.
Alan Grant?
Brent Carradine.
Oh, hello there.
Mr. Grant, an awful thing's happened.
Awful? How awful?
Oh, disastrous. You know that monkish chronicle in Latin I spoke of?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've just seen it. And the rumor's there. The rumor about the boys being dead. It ruins everything.
Now, hold on. Don't let's panic. After all, it's the truth we want. We're not simply proving a theory. Now, this chronicle, when was it written?
Oh, that's just the point. Before Richard's death. We're sunk. I can kiss my book goodbye.
Well, who wrote the chronicle?
Oh, some monk or other at Croyland Abbey, wherever that may be. But can't you see? If people were already saying the boys were dead...
Croyland? Did you say Croyland?
Uh-huh.
Hey, you obviously don't know where Croyland is.
No, I don't. Does it matter?
Does it matter? Does it matter, he says. My dear boy, Croyland is in the Fens, hard by Ely.
Ely?
Ely, I said. Get it? Morton was the Bishop of Ely.
Of course.
He fled there after the abortive coup in the autumn of 1483. Then he skipped over to France. Now, here we are with the rumour in Ely of the boy's death. Wouldn't it be just hunky-dory if the rumour slipped over to France with Morton, Out with your spyglass, Brent. Scour the records. See if you can find any trace of the rumour in France at about the same time. A pound to a penny you do.
Mr. Grant, you're a wonder.
Hmm?
Do they have more like you at Scotland Yard?
You didn't, did you?
I did.
the Chancellor of France, in a speech to the States General. He was railing against England. What he seemed to be saying was that the English were so far gone that they condoned the death of the boys by crowning the murderer.
Dates? Can you give me the dates of this rumor and the one at Croyland?
Sure, sure, I have them here. The monk at Croyland wrote in the late summer of 1483. The nasty slap in the States General was in January 1484.
Perfect. The rumor and John Morton went marching hand in hand. Morton's emerging as a full-time saboteur. It's quite understandable, really. Remember, they'd been bitter enemies for years, ever since Richard accused him of accepting a bribe from the French king. Unless Richard was disposed of, he knew his career was over, and he'd been within touching distance of an archbishopric. But there was Henry Tudor lurking in France with some sort of claim to the throne. If he could help Henry get the crown, then he might still become Archbishop of Canterbury. Yes, and perhaps a cardinal as well.
This is all very well, but suppose the rumour turns up somewhere else.
Well, it's possible, of course. But I'm willing to lay you any odds that it won't. I don't for one moment believe there was any general rumour that the boys were missing.
Why not?
Because Richard would have taken instant steps to counter it. Look how he stamped on the story that he was proposing to marry his niece, Elizabeth, the boy's eldest sister. He wrote all around the place denying the rumour, and even summoned local dignitaries to London to tell them face to face.
Yes, of course, you're right. Richard would have made a public denial if the rumour about the princes was general. After all, it was much more horrifying than that he was going to marry his niece. Mr. Grant, it looks as if I might write that book after all.
Most certainly you'll write it. You've not only to rescue Richard from calumny, you've to clear Edward the Fourth's widow, poor Elizabeth Woodville, of condoning her son's death.
I can't write the book and leave it in the air. I'll have to have a theory as to what became of the boys.
You will.
Why are you looking like a cat with the cream?
Well, I've been proceeding along police lines.
Police line?
Yeah. Who benefits in all that? We found that Richard wouldn't have gained a pin's worth of advantage from the boy's death. Who would? This is where Titulus Regius comes in.
But what has Titulus Regius got to do with the murders?
Listen, Henry VII married the boy's eldest sister, Elizabeth. He did that to unite the houses of Lancaster and York.
Yes.
Well, by repealing Titulus Regius, he makes it legitimate. He needs to do this to make sure of his children's right of succession.
Sure, I'm with you.
Well, by making her legitimate, he makes all Edward IV's children legitimate. He makes the two princes, still living, let us suppose, in the tower, heir to the throne before her. In fact, by repealing Titulus Regius, he makes the elder of the two King of England.
If they were alive, that is.
And if they were alive, what would be the only way out of the dilemma? Brent, I want to know a lot more about the confession of Tyrrell's. Concentrate on Tyrrell. Come back as soon as you've any news.
Mr. Grant? Hello there.
Over here, Brent.
Oh, there you are. They told me I'd find you in the grounds. Did you get here by yourself?
Slowly and painfully. But yes, I made it. Oh, lovely day, isn't it?
Yeah.
First real day of spring. Oh, take a seat.
Thanks. Researching the Peasants' Revolt taught me one thing. Chaucer's full of the English spring.
Ah, yes. When that April's sweetly falling showers have quenched the thirst of March's drought-parched flowers. Sir Thomas might have done better to copy out the Canterbury Tales than John Morton's so-called history.
Right. Well, I haven't come empty-handed. I managed to get quite a bit on Tyrrell.
Did you? Oh.
Hello, Nurse Ingham.
Hello. Out and about. I suppose that means you'll be leaving us soon.
Home by Easter, I'm told. Oh, you know Mr. Carradine.
Hello.
Hi.
We were just talking about a friend of yours.
A friend? Who?
Sir James Tyrrell.
Tyrrell? So you're still worrying away at that bone, why he wasn't brought to book for 20 years.
Mr. Carradine's been investigating for me. Well, who exactly was Tyrrell?
Not what I'd imagined. Not a hanger-on at all. He was quite important in his own way. Sir James Tyrrell of Gipping.
The real question is, how did he make out under Henry VII?
Well, that's the really interesting thing.
For such a successful Yorkist, he seems to have fairly blossomed after Richard's death. Henry made him Constable of Guienne, then he was sent as ambassador to Rome. He was one of the commissioners for negotiating the treaty at Etaples.
All jobs outside England. How long did this honeymoon with Henry last?
Oh, quite a long time. Everything was just grand until 1502.
And what happened in 1502?
Well, Henry heard that he'd been ready to help one of the York crowd in the Tower to escape. He sent half an army to besiege the castle of Guienne. Then he sent his Lord Privy Seal to offer Tyrrell safe conduct if he would come aboard a ship at Calais for a conference.
And don't tell me.
No need, is there? Poor old Tyrrell finished up in a dungeon in the Tower and was beheaded, as the record puts it, in great haste and without trial.
And what about his confession?
There wasn't one nursing him.
What?
Don't look at me like that. I'm not responsible.
But I was always told he confessed to the murder of the princes.
Believe me, there is no confession. Only accounts of a confession. Henry's pate historian, Polydore Virgil, gives an account of how the murder was done, but it was written after Tyrrell was dead.
If Tyrrell confessed in the Tower that he'd murdered the boys on Richard's orders, why wasn't he charged with the crime and tried for it?
I can't imagine.
Let me get this straight. Nothing was heard of Tyrrell's confession till he was dead.
That's right.
We're told he confessed that way back in 1483, nearly 20 years before, he pelted up to London from Warwick, got the keys of the Tower from the constable for one night, murdered the boys, handed back the keys, and reported back to Richard. He confesses all this and nothing is done.
Not a thing.
Well, what about the constable? Sir Robert Brackenbury. Didn't they even bring him in to confirm the story?
Brackenbury was killed at Bosworth, Nursingham.
Well, that makes it worse.
What do you mean?
Well, much worse for Henry Tudor. Oh, you men, you never look at practicalities. Just imagine, Henry arriving in London after the Battle of Bosworth. Now, it's 1485, he's just defeated Richard. Let's assume there's no rumour of the boy's death, so he sends to the Tower to ask after the princess.
Sir John Howard, on His Majesty's business, I have a message for the constable.
You haven't heard the news, Sir John? I'm afraid the constable is dead. Sir Robert fell at Bosworth.
Fighting on which side?
Oh, I couldn't say, Sir John.
He had a deputy?
I am the deputy constable.
Excellent. This is my warrant. Here is the royal seal. You are required to produce and hand over to my safekeeping the Prince Edward and his younger brother, Prince Richard.
I'm afraid that will not be possible, Sir John.
Not possible. Don't you understand, man? This is a warrant signed personally by King Henry and sealed with the royal seal.
Nonetheless, Sir John, I do not hold their royal highnesses.
Then where are they?
Sir John, the two young princes have disappeared.
Disappeared?
More than 2 years ago. It was while the late king was on his coronation tour. We were visited one night by a gentleman, rather like you, Sir John. He also came on the king's business. The late king's, that is, of course. He had two fellows with him, rather rough. Do you bring anyone with you?
I do not. And?
And he ordered Sir Robert to hand over the keys of the prince's cell.
Good God. And Sir Robert did so.
The gentleman's warrant was just like this one, Sir John. In fact, I think the seal was identical.
Yes, well, get on with it, man. He handed over the keys.
About 11 o'clock at night it was. At 6 next morning the keys were returned, but the boys had disappeared. We never saw them again.
But this is unbelievable. What am I to tell the king?
Why not tell him the truth?
The truth? I don't know what the truth is. This so-called gentleman to whom Sir Robert was so obliging, he didn't identify himself by any chance?
Oh, he did. He was Sir James Tyrrell of Gipping.
If that was really the way it happened, surely there'd have been a hue and cry after the man who'd been given the keys. The king would have had the kingdom scoured for the villain who'd been that monster Richard's tool. He'd have searched high and low for him, and when found, he'd have stood trial for abduction or even murder. Instead of which...
Instead of which, Tyrrell enjoys 20 years of peace and prosperity. Hmm. Even you, my dear Midget, much as you dislike Richard, must admit it smells more than a little fishy.
Nurse Ingham.
Hello, Brent. Just in time.
Oh, what for?
To come with me out to the grounds.
I've been told to get out of doors this afternoon, but I'm still a bit uncertain on my pins. They're strengthening me up for me discharge tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow? Oh, well, that's good news. Almost matches the news I've got for you.
Oh, will it keep until we're outside?
Sure.
Right, just a hand to lever myself out of this chair.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
Now, I'll lead the way. It's only a little way down here. Ah, there's a French window.
You seem quite steady to me.
Oh, steady but slow. Mr. Plod. it's a bit stiff, this door.
Oh, hold on.
It's going to be a lovely Easter weekend this year. I've known English summer's not half as warm as this. Over here.
All right.
Now then, what have you got for me?
First, the small item. It struck me yesterday that there was one person you forgot to ask about in your list of kind inquiries.
Oh, who?
Stillington.
Oh, of course. The worthy Bishop of Bath. If Henry hated that act, Titulus Regius, he must have loathed its instigator. What did happen to old Stillington?
Oh, the old boy was put on a charge, and Henry conveniently forgot to release him. He never came home.
Poor old chap. Still, it's what one would expect of Henry. That's the small item. Now, what's the real news?
It's good. No, good's not the word. Beautiful. It's perfectly, wholly beautiful.
What did you drink at lunch today?
I didn't have any lunch. I was too bung full of satisfaction.
I take it you found some break in the pattern.
That's it. But much later than I ever thought. A good long time after Henry got the crown.
Well, spill the beans.
Okay. At first, everything happened as you might expect. Henry takes over, marries the boy's sister, gets his own attainder reversed, and puts through an act of attainder against Richard and his loyal subjects. A crafty trick there, by the way. He antedated his succession by one day, and so made all Richard's followers traitors at a stroke.
Henry at his most typical.
Absolutely. Anyway, it was in August 1485 he succeeded to the throne. He married the boy's sister, Elizabeth, the following January, and she had her first child in September. September 1486, that is. The Queen Dowager was in evidence throughout and was present at the baptism. Then she came back to London. In February 1487, she was suddenly shut up in a convent for the rest of her life.
Elizabeth Woodville?
Yes, that's right. The boy's mother.
Good heaven.
Henry stripped her of everything she owned.
Did he say why?
Well, for being nice to Richard, I suppose. Or, as Henry's pet historian puts it, for various considerations.
Well, what was his real reason? Have you any suggestions?
Well, I have another little item that may give you an idea. It certainly gave me one.
Oh, go on.
In June of 1486, the year of Henry's marriage and his son's birth, Sir James Tyrrell received a general pardon. The 16th of June, to be precise.
That means very little, you know. It was quite a usual thing at the end of a period of service or on setting out on a new one.
Yes, I know. I know that. The first pardon isn't the surprising one.
The first pardon? Was there a second one?
That's just it. A second general pardon to Sir James Tyrrell exactly 1 month later on the 16th of July.
You're telling me that on the 16th of June, Tyrrell is given a general pardon, and on the 16th of July, he's given a second general pardon.
Suggestive?
Very. Then the boy's mother comes back to town about November, and in February, she's locked up for life.
Them's the facts.
When did the rumor that the boys were missing first become general?
Quite early in Henry's reign, it seems.
It fits. It all fits. Those poor boys were probably done away with sometime between the 16th of June and the 16th of July, 1486.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Sir James Tyrrell did go to the Tower on the King's business, but he didn't go in 1483. He went 3 years later. And the King, whose orders he was acting on, wasn't Richard at all, but Henry the Seventh. Henry Tudor.
Damn your orders! Don't you know the royal signature and seal when you see them?
I'm not sure, sir.
Here, see. This is His Majesty's warrant, signed by the King himself, Henricus.
Oh.
Well, can't you read, man?
No, sir.
Oh, the royal seal. You can recognize that. Devil seize the man. Will you take us to the constable?
Oh, I can't do that, sir.
Why not in the name of Satan?
Sir Robert fell at Bosworth, sir.
Well, who's in charge of the tower?
The deputy constable, sir.
Well, take us to him, then. And make haste, man. This is urgent.
Good, sir.
You two, wait outside while I'm with the deputy. I'll pass you the keys. You'll know where to go and what to do.
Yes, Sir James. We know.
Leave it to us, Sir James.
It would certainly explain why there was no fuss when the boys disappeared. Just think how impossible it would have been for Richard to get away with it. Mm-hmm. He had a very powerful opposition, whom he allowed to remain freely scattered up and down the land. But Henry was a different animal. He made sure that all his opposition was safely in jail. The only possible danger was his mother-in-law. And now we know what happened to her.
Poor woman. Walled up where she could be no trouble to anyone. Elizabeth Woodville, mother of the princes in the tower, who lived free and prosperous under Richard. There's a break in the pattern, if you like. I wonder what Henry told his wife about her two brothers.
The truth?
Henry, never.
Shabby. He was a shabby creature. Everything he did was shabby. Come to think of it, Morton's Fork is the shabbiest piece of revenue raising in history. Tell me, there's something I forgot to ask you. How soon after that double pardon did Tyrrell get his appointment in France?
I was saving that as a parting shot. Huh? The answer is almost right away.
So, another piece in the jigsaw.
And you'll be interested to know that John Dighton, one of Tyrrell's thugs, received the proceeds of a very nice living as from May 1487.
Well, well.
Lovely, isn't it?
Oh, beautiful, to use your word. By the way, have you started your book?
I've made a sort of beginning. I know the way I want to write it. I hope you won't mind.
Why should I mind?
Well, I want to write it the way it happened. You know, about my coming to see you and our starting this Richard thing quite casually and not knowing what we were getting into. And how we stuck to things that actually happened and used the good old police technique of looking for the break in the normal pattern. That sort of thing.
I think it's a great idea.
Oh, you do? Then I'll get on with it. Poor Atlanta. She's not speaking to me at the moment. What our relationship will be like now, I shudder to think. Oh, but honestly, Mr. Grant, this is the first time in my life anything really exciting has happened to me. Important, I mean. Not exciting.
You found something worth doing.
That's it. Something worth doing. Well, I'll be off. But I'll be back tomorrow to escort you out of this place. What time are you leaving?
Oh, I'm not quite sure. Before lunch, they said. Oh, are you sure you can spare the time?
I wouldn't miss it. I'll be here at midday, okay?
Alan, darling, are you ready?
Marta, what on earth are you doing here?
A fine greeting. I've come to take you home.
Hey, wow. You look quite stunning.
Like it?
I love the hat.
It is rather sweet. My Easter bonnet. I bought it yesterday in honour of the occasion.
What occasion?
Your return home, of course. Well, you are going home today.
Yes, I am going home. Hey, come here. You can move faster than me.
Now, why aren't you dressed and packed or anything?
No, it won't take very long. I had to wait for my surgeon. He's only just gone. I'll be ready quite soon. Hey, how did you get here?
Taxi, how else?
Brent Carradine's due with the car before too long.
I know, darling. We're all going back together. Don't worry your poor old head about the details. Just get ready.
Oh, it's about time this place looked less like an incident room at Scotland Yard. If you're leaving, you'd better make a start.
Thought you'd have me here for months, didn't you?
We're very glad to see you better so quickly. And to have your bed, of course. Miss Hallard, I wonder whether you'd care to wait outside while Mr. Grant gets dressed.
I'll go and have coffee, then. Back soon, darling.
Well, I'll leave you to it.
Oh, thanks, Midget.
Suppose it's too late to insist on being addressed as Nurse Ingham?
Much too late. Won't be long.
Hello, Mr. Grant.
Brent. Oh, come in while I finish dressing. Good grief, what's the matter? What on earth has happened?
Hello.
Well, what's up? Discovered there was a general rumor about the boys before Richard's death after all.
Oh, much worse than that. I'll never write that book now.
Oh, why not, Brent?
Because it isn't news to anyone. Everyone's known all about everything.
Known? What about?
About Richard not having killed the boys at all. And all that.
They've known? Oh, since when?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds of years. As soon as the Tudors had gone, it was safe to talk. A man called Buck wrote a vindication in the 17th century. And Horace Walpole in the 18th. And someone called Markham in the 19th.
And who in the 20th?
No one that I know of.
Then what's wrong with you doing it?
Oh, but it won't be the same, don't you see? It won't be a great discovery.
Oh, come. You can't expect to pick great discoveries off bushes. If you can't be a pioneer, what's wrong with leading a crusade?
A crusade?
Sure. If people have been pointing out for 350 years that Richard didn't murder his nephews, and a schoolbook can still say in words of one syllable that he did, then it seems to me it's time you got busy.
By heaven, you're right. I'll make them sit up and take notice. You nearly ready?
Nearly.
I suppose in a week or two you'll be too busy with real investigations to care about an academic one.
I promise you, I'll never enjoy one more than I've enjoyed this. Hey, do you know what I personally find the most convincing thing in Richard's favor?
No. What?
That he had to send for those troops from the north when Stillington broke his news. Now, if he'd planned or known what was afoot, he'd have had those troops ready.
You're right. He came down south expecting to take over the regency. He met the news of the Woodville trouble at Northampton, but that didn't rattle him. He went on expecting an orthodox coronation. It wasn't till Stillington confessed to the council that he sends for troops of his own. And he has to send all the way to the north of England. Yes, you're right, of course. He was taken aback. Know what I find the most convincing thing against Henry?
Mm-hmm. What?
The mystery. The hole and corner stuff.
Why is that?
Because Richard had no need of any mystery. But Henry's whole case depended on it. Richard couldn't have hoped to get away with the mysterious end for the boys. Sooner or later, he'd have had to account for their not being there. But in any case, he didn't need to. He only had to have them suffocated and let out that they died of a fever. They could have lain in state while everyone wept for their untimely death.
True.
Goodness. The whole point of Richard killing the boys would have been to prevent any rising in their favor. To get any benefit, their death would have to be made public. But Henry now. To be able to put the blame on Richard, he had to find a way of pushing them out of sight. Henry's whole case depended on no one knowing exactly what happened to the boys.
You ought to be at the Yard, Mr. Carradine. Oh, here. You'd better take this Sir Cuthbert Oliphant.
Oh, thanks.
Historians should be made to take a course in elementary psychology before they're allowed to write.
Thanks. Oh, the portrait.
Oh, yes, the portrait. You know, I think perhaps Matron came nearest to the heart of the matter.
What did she say?
It's a face full of the most dreadful suffering.
Yes. Yes, I suppose it is. Do you know what the town of York wrote? Wrote in their records, mind you, about the Battle of Bosworth?
No.
They wrote, "This day was our good King Richard piteously slain and murdered, to the great heaviness of this city."
Our good King Richard?
Mm-hmm.
Hardly the obituary of a hated usurper. Not what you'd expect if all England loathed the monster who'd slaughtered his innocent nephews.
No, no. Our good King Richard.
Is thy name Tyrell?
James Tyrell, and your most obedient subject.
Art thou, indeed?
Prove me, my gracious lord.
Darest thou resolve to kill a friend of mine?
Please you, but I had rather kill two enemies.
Why, then thou hast it. Two deep enemies, foes to my rest and my sweet sleep's disturbers, are they that I would have thee deal upon. Tyrell, I mean those bastards in the tower.
Let me have open means to come to them, and soon I'll rid you from the fear of them.
Oh, thou singst sweet music. Hark, come hither, Tyrell. Go by this token. Rise and lend thine ear. There is no more but so. Say, it is done, and I will love thee and prefer thee for it.
I will dispatch it straight.
Oh, Mr. Carradine.
Oh, hi.
I just had to drop in, Mr. Grant, to say goodbye.
I'm so glad you did, Nurse Darrell. It gives me a chance to return your two history books.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
No, thank you. I really am most grateful. Without them, I'd never have got started on Richard. And it's been a fascinating journey.
Oh, we'll miss you, you know. We've grown used to having you here. We've even got used to that.
Oh, the portrait.
Yeah.
Darrell, will you do something for me?
Of course.
Will you take it over to the window and look at it for as long as it takes to count a pulse?
Yes, of course, if you want me to, but why?
Well, never mind why. Just do it to please me.
All right.
Well?
It's funny. When you look at it for a little, it's really quite a nice face, isn't it?
Peter Gilmore starred as Alan Grant in The Daughter of Time. Simon Hewitt was Brent Carradine, Frances Jeter, Nurse Ingham, Rosalind Shanks, Marta Hallard, and Jill Lidston was Nurse Darrell. Richard III was played by Steve Hodson, Sir James Tyrrell, Nigel Lambert, Sir Robert Brackenbury, Lewis Stringer, Lady Paston, Miranda Forbes, Edward IV, Graham Faulkner, Matron Catherine Parr, Sergeant Williams, Stuart Organ, Archbishop Morton, Peter Tudnam, Lord Buckingham, Alex Jennings, Bishop Stillington, James Thomason, and Sir John Howard was Alaric Cotter. Josephine Tay's novel was dramatized by Neville Teller and directed by Graham Gould.